With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We're going to talk NBA basketball tonight. We get the Warriors and the Rockets. Very important game. As close to a must-win situation as possible for the Houston Rockets. We'll talk about that in just a bit. We will recap what happened last night. The Cavaliers draw even with the Celtics with a 111-102 win. And joining us right now to talk about it, we have James Holis of bballbreakdown.com. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter at @snottydrippin. James, a pleasure as always to get you on the show, man. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on, man. The day after a bad Celtics loss, I appreciate it.
Yeah. You know, James, for those listeners who don't know, he is a Celtics fan. And I'm sure, James, if we'd have got you on, I don't know, like 4 days ago, you were probably riding a high. Do you still feel confident about the Celtics even after what you have witnessed over the last two games?
I'm going to be honest. I was never confident.
Okay.
I haven't been confident this whole playoff run. I thought they would lose to the Bucks. I thought they would lose to Philly. I was, like, flabbergasted how they were up 2-0 on the Cavs. So even then, it was a cautious optimism. We know that, you know, when a team is up 2-0, almost overwhelmingly they win the series. But I also know that this is a team that's best player is, you know, well, the best offensive player right now is 20 years old. Second best is, you know, 21-year-old. Al Horford, as great as he is as a complimentary piece, he's not some featured guy. And they're playing against LeBron James, who is arguably the best player of all time. So I knew that even up 2-0, nothing was safe, and all of my my greatest fears came to fruition back in Cleveland. I think before the series I called Cavs in 6 or 7, and so like that I'm almost resigned to the fact that I was probably spot on.
Yeah, but look, I mean, being a Celtics fan, and I know that you're looking at things realistic, and I get that, but we also have to look at the fact that this is not a good team. I'm talking about the Celtics, not a good team on the road, at least in the postseason. They have not been good on the road, and the fact remains, they did what they needed to do in games 1 and 2. Cleveland, they did what they needed to do in games 3 and 4, so if you're Boston, you still have control of this series, and I think that's also a realistic way to look at this.
I'm a believer in momentum. I know that usually momentum doesn't carry over game to game, but when you're dealing with a short series, you know, now it's best of three. But, like, right now the Cavs have all the confidence. And I get it. They were playing at home and not going to play on the road. But I think, like, a series evolves. And so games 1 and 2 were the first step in that evolution. 3 and 4, another step. They're not going to go back to step 1 when we get to, you know, game 5. So the Cavs now have a certain amount of familiarity with what Boston does. They have a certain amount of confidence. They saw the ball go in for 2 games. It's a different ball game now. It's not when they showed up from playing Toronto, who they mentally dominated, to facing this tough Celtics team. And, you know, it was a punch in the face. And they woke up from that punch in the face. So the my point is, like, the fight doesn't reset to square one just because they're back in Boston. This is a whole different thing. So, yes, I expect Boston to play better. They played better last night. Two nights ago. No, yeah, last night. They played better last night. But, I mean, LeBron James was still LeBron James, and Kevin Love played with more confidence. All their guys played with more confidence. So, this is having LeBron James, you know, the best player in the series, sometimes does matter. I think in this case it might matter. So, I'm still cautiously optimistic, but no matter what, I know next season we've got 2 All-Stars coming back. I'm already kind of looking forward to that, so maybe I'm not as optimistic as I say I am.
Well, when we look at Cleveland, I feel like sometimes I spend way too much time on the show talking about what Cleveland hasn't done right. What's gone wrong for this team? And again, I can look at that and look at some of the, you know, the trade deadline moves that they made. I mean, again, Jordan Clarkson, completely worthless last night, has not been good this entire postseason. Rodney Hood did not even play a single minute last night. Larry Nance is Larry Nance. I mean, he's, what, 3 rebounds, 7 points is what he had last night. But one of the guys that if you look at the box score, James, and you did not watch the game, George Hill's numbers are not going to pop off at you. But he played very composed, and I think at times in this game last night, he was key for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I know LeBron had 44, Tristan Thompson had 13 and 12, Kevin Love flirted with a double-double, I get that. But if you watch the game, George Hill played in control last night. To me, that was a really big deal, something that I noticed in this game.
Absolutely. In the last two games, actually, he was instrumental in them getting off to a hot start in game 3. And last game 4, he had a big he stole a rebound from Terry Rozier, who's a great rebounding guard, and he retained possession. He hit a couple big threes as they were extending that first quarter lead. When Boston was kind of threatening late, he ISO'd up on Aaron Baines and ended up getting to the rim for a layup. Same thing. The game was kind of, Boston was trying to battle back into it. He takes Marcus Morris to the hole, gets another foul on Marcus Morris, and scores the and-one. He was absolutely key. Him playing his role, he's best at the role of, I'm going to be the glue guy, and he played that to perfection last night. He didn't score a lot, but he scored when needed. He didn't rebound a lot, but he grabbed the key rebound. So, yeah, he was actually really good last night, and that's my thing. Like, now that these guys have woken up after being, he was a zero in games 1 and 2. Now that he's woken up, it's going to be hard for the Celtics to shove that back into the box. And that's where I'm kind of concerned moving forward.
You did mention Al Horford, games 1 and 2. Look, game 1, he went for, 20 and 7, something like that. Game 2, he was 15 and 10, but he was very efficient in both of those games. What's been the biggest difference that you've noticed from Cleveland defensively or even offensively, some of the ways that they have been able to neutralize Al Horford in games 3 and 4, because he's not been good.
Because I hate that it's been a running Cavaliers joke. They're just playing Tristan Thompson. They're mirroring Tristan Thompson's minutes to Al Horford. And Thompson's physicality and his relative athleticism compared to Al Horford, he really gets into him, and he doesn't give him a lot of airspace to find guys for passes or to get his shot off. So he really neutralizes what Al Horford does so well, spacing the floor, passing from the perimeter and the elbows. He just suffocates him, and he renders him almost neutral. So even last night, I think he had, 15 and 7? He wasn't great. And so, yeah, Al Horford was like a plus 2 overall. But, I think one of the Cavs guys really enjoys the whole Tristan Thompson, Al Horford thing. He said, the Celtics were their net rating was plus 53 when Tristan sat, and a negative 1 when Tristan was on the court. So all they did was they matched up Tristan's minutes with Al, and Al has to find a way to be effective with Tristan on the floor. And Celtics are already down as far as behind the 8-ball in this series because they're dealing with LeBron James. If they have any kind of shot, Al Horford has to be more aggressive and be more effective, even with Tristan on the floor.
Again, we're being joined right now by James Holas at bballbreakdown.com. We'll get some more information from James in just a moment on where you can find more of his work. James, let's shift over to the Western Conference. Tonight we get the Rockets and the Warriors, as close to a must-win situation as you could possibly have without it being an actual must-win situation. Again, I would expect maybe not the same fashion of blowout that we saw in Game 3. I just don't see Houston beating Golden State and Oracle. I just don't.
Yeah, and the one panacea for my glum feelings about the Celtics is I enjoy watching the Rockets get their heads beat in. Their fans and their media guys have been really overbearing all season. And I think, like you said, I think sometimes people overthink this stuff. The Warriors have two MVP caliber guys, they have two All-Stars, and the Rockets have two very high-level All-Stars. One MVP guy and an All-Star. And, the talent math just doesn't match up. So, the Rockets do what they do. They're going to shoot a lot of threes, ISO, Chris Paul, and James Harden, but just not enough against a team like Golden State. So, I never thought Rockets really had much of a shot. It was cool that they blew them out in Game 2. But I think me and you are in agreement that the Warriors are just too good for the Rockets. And I think we're going to see tonight, as much as this is a must-win for Houston, they're not going to win. And, you're down 3-1 to the Warriors. You might as well, unless you're getting Iggy suspended and you have LeBron James, it's probably a wrap.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But speaking of things that Houston has to get done, and I said this at the beginning of the series, in order for Houston to win individual games, this has to be a complete run-and-gun, barn-burner type game. I'm talking Houston has to score. I said before the series, Houston has to score 125-plus to have a chance to win games. The one game they won, they scored 127. Now, what makes this so difficult is, for as good as Houston is offensively, James, something that does not get talked about enough, Golden State's pretty good defensively.
Yeah, and I'm going to – you're right. It was dope that they scored 120-plus, but it's more key that they keep the physicality on Steph Curry. That's been the thing. They keep games close, or they win when they can keep Steph Curry under wraps, which to me is weird. I always thought Kevin Durant was a better player there, but I think Steph Curry is more important to what Golden State does. But yeah, you can't. They can't let him get loose, and that's hard. It's easier said than done. Obviously, they did a really good job of it through 2.5 games, and then he had that huge quarter, and the floodgates opened in Golden State. So I'm more concerned. I mean, I guess I'm curious to see, was that a breakout game for Steph Curry, and now all over but screaming, or was that just an anomaly? And can the Houston Rockets get him back corralled and get their role players going again? We know that's what won them that game, right? PJ Tucker and Eric Gordon having these giant games. If the Warriors can basically shackle everybody else, it doesn't matter if Harden gets 40, right? It doesn't matter if, Chris Paul has a big game. If they can shackle everybody else, they're going to win this one pretty handily.
Well, on top of that, I mean, Chris Paul was not good in Game 3. He was so inefficient offensively, so inefficient.
I love it because, that's Chris Paul's thing is his efficiency, and he's a very smart player, and he has no real holes in his skill set. But the thing is, when you're a 6'1 point guard with limited athleticism, at some point you're going to reach to a case where it's diminishing returns, right? Because even as they were getting blown out, he started chipping away and hitting a lot of lows mid-range. And even in game one, when they were getting beat, he scored a lot as they were down big. So it doesn't really matter, But, yeah, Chris Paul's a great player, but I don't know, when you're dealing with a team like the Warriors, is he going to break your back? No. And I don't think he is.
Last question before I let you go. Andre Iguodala, he's questionable for Game 4. I don't know what type of Iggy we get in this game. How much of a factor does that play in the series, if any at all?
I mean, that's a big factor. He's a key part of that death lineup they run out. I refuse to call them the other name that people try to call him. That's a silly name. But yeah, his versatility, his intelligence, he will make that key defensive play. He'll hit that big shot. He can guard everybody from Chris Paul all the way to, spend a little bit of time if he needs to on Clint Capella. So if he's out of the game and they're going to be depending on guys like, Kevon Looney, Jordan Bell, these guys are young and they're still ripe and they're so talented, but they don't have the wealth of knowledge that Iguodala has. So, yeah, it's something to look out for. But, again, he's not part of that core four. And, the Warriors still should, and that's, it's a big should, unless they let their foot off the gas. The Warriors still should, I think they still should have this next game, if Iggy's not 100%.
James Solis, again, at bballbreakdown.com. James, let us know where we can find more of your work.
Yeah, B-Ball Breakdown. Check us out there on Twitter. I'm at Snotty Drippin. Homage to the great Scottie Pippen. You can also see some of my stuff over at Real Ball Insiders, and I do the Dunk Tales pod with my man Joe Borelli.
Hey, James, it's always a pleasure to get you on and talk some basketball. Thank you again for making time today, and we'll do it again soon.
Thanks a lot, brother. Love having you. Love coming on.
Again, that's James Holis of bballbreakdown.com. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports when we return.